Good morning, Tucson, and welcome to Jump In Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, as the intro said, and we've got Matt Neely keeping us on time and on target with the show and making sure we don't get ourselves in any trouble. The purpose of the Engagement Hour is to really demonstrate individuals that have gotten involved and played a major part in their community, but it's also to encourage you to get involved. We've got to remember we're a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country and or to our community. There's a lot of ways to get involved. And my guest today is a retired Chief Master Sergeant, Shane Clark. He's currently the director of the, you can correct me on this if I get it wrong, the Pima County Department of Emergency Management. But he's got nearly 41 years of public service to this country, to this community, to our region. And I just think he's a great guest to have on this week where we celebrate all the freedoms and independence we do have in this country. So first, Chief, I've got to let everybody know I've served with you for a long time now, and I appreciate all you've done for this community. You're a great example for family, faith, and involvement. And so I look forward to having an hour to talk with you.
It's great to be here, and thank you. Yes, we do go back quite a few years, especially during our time in the Air Force and the Air National Guard, and I appreciate your leadership and the mentorship that you provided to many of us airmen over many years.
It goes both ways on that, Chief. A lot of time people don't understand the unique relationship between officers and enlisted corps, and leaders exist throughout the Air Force. I've always been very clear that everybody in the Air Force, from the lowest ranking airman to the senior ranking officer, all can be leaders. And it takes a lot of words, wisdom, and advice. Matter of fact, the first advice I ever got as a cadet at the Air Force Academy on one of my summer tours, I was down in Columbus Air Force Base, Mississippi, and I had a chief come up to me and say, "Son, when you become a lieutenant, if you want to be a good leader in the military, find yourself the crustiest old enlisted member you can and listen to what he has to say." So,
and I was that guy for you, I guess.
I won't say you were crusty and old, but so I'm going to probably flip back between Chief and Shane for all those listening today. It's kind of hard to get out of it, and we may even reference some of your finest basketball moves, but that's another story.
Another day.
So you're in Arizona.
I am
born and raised. And so I always encourage people that come on the show to kind of tell me about their background and what it was that got them to a point where they decided service to others was the best thing for them and for their willingness to serve the community or the country.
Yeah, born in Tucson, raised in the Tombstone, Arizona area after my daddy got hurt and we had to start a new chapter in life. And that's where kind of the roots were. And then returned to Tucson when I got into the Arizona Air National Guard and became a firefighter in 1983. And as you mentioned, in 2 days will be 41 years of public service in past and current roles. And it's who would have ever thought that a Tombstone kid, Tombstone educated, raised his right hand in 1983 would be able to live the dream that I've been able to live, serving my country, my community, most importantly, my faith and my family. So,
well, let's not cut yourself short, Chief. You always relied on telling us that you're just a Tombstone raised and educated kid. What was it about growing up in that part of Arizona and the values that it gave you that encouraged you at the age of 18 to take the jump, join the Arizona Air National Guard, and become a firefighter?
You know, growing up in the early 70s, in a small community where you knew everybody, and the influences of being from a small community, my dad raised us hard, raised us to work hard, and took a lot of pride in our ability to work hard for our community. Me and my brother, who also served over, you know, 3 decades in public service, as both in the law enforcement arena and as an emergency manager himself, that work ethic started when we were young. We had a lot of responsibility, and we needed to be the workforce for my family, you know, when my dad couldn't do it because he was trying to raise a living for us. And it was that work ethic that led us through life. And then in high school, I started about 16 years old. I met my first real fire chief for our small community volunteer fire department. And he kind of started that thought process in my head about life of public service in the fire department. And then it was at Tombstone High School on a recruiting trip, Master Sergeant Stan Brown showed up at the Tombstone Library. And there was a man that was influential in my life. He was a couple years older than me. And he was on the Air Guard Fire Department at the time and said, this is a really good gig. And I think it was those three factors that made me raise my right hand. So that's what started.
So a lot of people understand that when you join the Air Force, you go off to boot camp, you get your training, and then you get sent all over the world. A little different story with the Arizona Air National Guard. And can you kind of talk about those early years and how it helped you progress to what became both a civilian and military career after that?
Yeah, sure. The National Guard was in essence when I first got in the early 80s up until 1991, it was a true reserve force, whether it was the Air National Guard or Air Force Reserve. And the job was to backfill the active duty component, especially when they were deployed downrange. That changed in 1991 with the first Gulf War. And I remember waking up as a middle manager and seeing F-16s getting launched out of Aviano, and they were Air National Guard F-16s. And I knew at that point in time that our life was changing in their Air Guard, and it did. It accelerated very, very quickly. And the times that I was deployed after that, to include my time in Iraq as a fire chief, it didn't matter if it was active duty guard or reserve component. We were all trained the same. I would say that I would compare the ins and outs of the firefighting force and the reserve component to be at an equal level, even higher, because a lot of these firefighters, to including myself, we were trained in many more disciplines that we were trained in the Air Force. And so we brought a level of experiences that absolutely played true in Iraq in some of the missions that we had to entail, being paramedics and EMTs and technical rescue, those kind of things.
Well, Chief, that's a great place for us to go to our first break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about more of that time you spent in the military, and we'll weave in a little bit about your public service as a community firefighter as well. So you're listening to Jump in Tucson on 1030 The Voice. My guest today is retired Chief Master Sergeant Shane Clark of the Arizona Air National Guard and also of Pima County. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. Thank you, Matt. I always appreciate when you play a little Bruce to lead me in and out of my segments. My guest today is Chief Master Sergeant retired Shane Clark, and he set up in the beginning segment how he got involved in the Air National Guard. It was important. Often, I think you think of the Air National Guard and you think it's purely a military thing, but Chief, your role in the Air National Guard, you were both a military member and you were a state employee as a firefighter. Can you talk about kind of how the Guard blends sometimes those two career paths where you can have a civilian job and a military job at the same time?
Yeah, sure. You know, it goes back to status and it goes back to evolution within the Guard and setting up programs for sustainability, especially a wing as big as the 162nd was with the International Flying Mission. It has to look more like an Air Force base. But when we start talking about certain career fields like firefighting, you can't just deploy every firefighter downrange because you lose the mission set. And so having a civilian firefighting force that worked for the Department of Emergency Military Affairs allowed for that consistency and that endearing mission to support our training mission in Tucson. And then we were also military firefighters. So, you know, during the week, I could be wearing the blue uniform like you find a structural firefighter in Tucson today. And then on the weekend or deployed, I'm in that military uniform now. And that's what happened. September 11th changed our life. We know that.
Absolutely.
And I remember waking up my wife, Lori, who was a Tucson firefighter at the time,
And Lori also enjoys jumping out of airplanes, which is a pilot's perspective I've never understood.
Yeah, 7,000 times. Over 7,000
that's incredible.
Lori was pregnant with our first daughter. And I woke up getting ready to go to work, I'm sure like you were that day, and turned on the TV and the first tower was on fire. And thinking that it was, going back to my firefighter training, air collision against a building, something that they had planned for in their strategies. In every large city, those things happen. And then when the second plane hit, I'm waking up Lori, we're watching this unfold together. And I told her after the second plane hit that we're going to war.
And as I recall, because I was in bed when the first plane hit, because we were night flying that week. So we were probably all on a wing-wide late shift. And so many of us were at home before when the calls came around us telling us, stay home. We don't know what's going on. But you already mentioned 91, the focus of the Guard changed.
Right.
Because after the first Gulf War, we went down significantly in the number of fighter units we had. 127 squadrons when the first Gulf War happened. By the time 9/11 happened, we were down to about 55.
That's right.
So your assessment at that moment was absolutely true. Now, as a firefighter, you know, the question was, well, how much support are we going to need? But you had the opportunity, and I'll call it the opportunity because sometimes what people lose on the Guard is it's really a two-way street on deployment. Sometimes they're mandatory, but the majority of the times we're looking for volunteers in the wing who want to deploy. And at that point, you were a chief, not a chief master sergeant, I don't believe. I think you were still a senior, but you were chief of the fire department.
That's correct.
And that was a significant role, and it was important. And so you put your hand up in the air and said, if you need a chief to deploy downrange, I'll go. And you had that opportunity to deploy to Iraq in 2004.
That's correct.
Can you just kind of, there was probably one of the best experiences of your life and also probably one of the worst experiences of your life. So if you could share part of that story with our listeners, I'd greatly appreciate it.
I think the thing that comes to mind first is the sacrifice of the family. And, you know, we had a toddler and we had about a 9-month-old when I deployed. And That's the window that faces all of us as deployed airmen, soldiers, sailors, and Marines, is that you're walking away from your life, you're walking away from your family life because of our contribution to serve our country, and we are afforded that opportunity to go downrange and to serve. I think what people lose scope of sometimes is that, you know, it's not all focused against the battle on the fire and on the ground or the battle in the air, but it takes this total force to make that work. We're starting up whole new bases. And we just served a small part of that. You know, our job was to provide structural firefighting, aircraft firefighting, and medical response like we do in our civilian world, but it was in a combat zone environment. We were about 60 miles north of Baghdad on a large logistical base with an Air Force base inside of a large logistical base. So the responsibility was immense. I was the first Air Force fire chief to lead the firefighting efforts on an Army installation. So I was working with the Army leadership probably more than I was working with the Air Force leadership, which was a great environment for me to learn from. But we also had an outside-the-wire firefighting team, and their mission was, it was called the Rescue Air Mobile Squad, and their mission was to go out when we had soldiers, sailors, Marines in combat that had become trapped in vehicles and things, and our job was to go rescue. And when you are in an environment like that, it is a high-risk environment, low-frequency environment, and you are absolutely correct. It was the best mission of my career. Been deployed many times, but that was the best mission of my career. And it was the February 13th of 05 was the worst day of my life when we lost one of our own on a rescue mission. And so you walk through that. You walk through that journey with trying to keep a fire department running with highly dedicated firefighters that have to be there for the mission because there's no way to decompress that from the mission. So I learned a lot, but I don't attribute it to as much as to my leadership style as that I had a really great leadership team that was above me with my base civil engineer, my mission support group commander, wing commander, and then, of course, I had a fantastic group of enlisted leaders serving as my assistant chiefs, deputy chiefs, special operations chiefs, and then down to every firefighter. They were the best team I ever worked with.
A lot of time, these kind of tragic situations make you learn a lot about yourself and about others and about that leadership front. It's all about service. And you're obviously in a foreign country deployed, you're serving not only your own airmen, and that's your number one priority, but you're also serving the community in there and setting the example. Can you just tell me some of the lessons that you brought back from that situation? Because I know it had an emotional toll, but it wasn't the end of your career. And what did you bring back from those lessons learned that you helped? Because you, when you came back from that time, you stepped out for a little bit, and we'll talk about that later, and then you really took a leadership role inside the Air National Guard. So can you kind of talk about how that incident and that whole experience of that deployment played into your future decisions?
I think that leading up to the deployment, I think it goes back to your training. You got to train us how you're going to perform. And in the military, you know, as a, I was both a civilian firefighter and a military firefighter, you know, the training is just different. You're trained to be a combat firefighter. In my case, you were trained to be a combat pilot. And so you take that training and you put it into that environment that is brand new. It's an uncomfortable place to go when you've never been there before and you don't know what the mission truly serving. So it always goes back to training. But I've always believed in leadership, that it's being a servant leader and then bringing them up with you in those leadership roles. I've never been one to say that all the words stop at the fire chief level. It's a management, a team. And in the fire service, that can be a tactical management team when we're out there fighting the fire or dealing with the emergency. But most important, it's the team that you build when you're behind the doors of the station and having them have the opportunity of being a part of the management process. And I always trained and I always taught that you got to learn one up and you got to teach two down. And if we do that in every one of our MOSs and our AFSCs within our military, our skill set, if you're always building a military or a public safety department to learn one up and build and teach two down, we're never going to lose a war. I mean, we're never going to lose because you're bringing everybody into the environment together and you're not segregating out just because based off of rank or based off of age or it's a team effort.
So Chief, I'd say that is a transferable lesson to any organization.
Absolutely.
Not just the military, community service, engagement in a public, in your personal life. It's lifelong learning lessons. And I think it's important to hear people like you share that. So after you returned back from Iraq, what were your thoughts and feelings when you first got back about what your future was going to hold?
I knew that I thrived in crisis environments. I did not feel in my comfort zone having the same thing happen every day. And I think that it was building off of what got me to being a chief. Absolutely, my performance early on in my first few years as a chief. I got deployed to Iraq about 6 months after I became fire chief of the wing for the first time. I mean, the fire chief. And so those experiences and then coming back and I just thrived on trying to build teams. And it didn't matter what the skill set was. And your point is exactly right. I go and do leadership talks now and it's not focused on my job as an incident commander. It's just how do we employ leadership qualities within any organization?
Well, it's that leadership and service to others. We've both spoke a lot on leadership, and we said leadership occurs at all levels of an organization. You have to have it. And we'll talk a little bit about why you decided to take a different tact when you first came back and ultimately returned to your service in the Arizona Air National Guard, almost full-time leading young men and women to improve the organization and to improve themselves. So my guest today is Chief Master Sergeant Retired Shane Clark from the Arizona Air National Guard, or I should just say Arizona National Guard, because that's where you kind of finished. And we will be back after the break. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm glad to see you all come back listening to our show today. And if you're here for the first time during this hour, I'm Ted Maxwell. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I've got Matt Neely behind the glass. And my guest today is Chief Master Sergeant retired Shane Clark. He served, we've talked through your career so far, Shane, up to the point of your deployment to Iraq and the impact that had on you and your focus on leadership above and below. And as a chief, that leadership above was a critical part of your job. You had to train, you know, some senior officers like myself, General McGuire, and some others who've been relatively successful, but you had to keep us in check. But before you went there, when you came back from Iraq, shortly after, you decided you were going to take a different role and you're going to go work in rural metro. And can you talk about that decision, what you were thinking about, and then what your experience is combining your previous experience as a state and military fire chief, and now you're leading what we call the pure community fire department?
Early on in my career, I had a great opportunity, as we do in the fire service, and especially with the unique skill set that we, our mission is to fly fighters, to be able to build relationships outside of the wing, the guard, and take that into a training environment to all the local fire departments, because, you know, aircraft have the possibility of having a catastrophic incident in our civilian community, right? And so as a young firefighter, as a young training specialist assigned to the training section, I found myself going out more and more and teaching F-16 egress, teaching F-16 the things to stay away from because of the hazards of the aircraft, and I built relationships. It's all about relationships. And so as I was growing up with my peers working as firefighters in other departments, over the course of time, we all become chiefs together and leaders together. And I had an opportunity in 2006. I received a phone call from somebody that I admired very much as a fire chief. And there's two fire chiefs that I will tell you that have probably had the most impact in my life. One was my first fire chief, Chief Master Sergeant Don Moody. Incredible man. Always drove us hard and really built great teams and worked through adversity, a lot of adversity when you have teams. And then Les Cade was the chief at the time at Rural Metro Fire Department. He called me and he said, I need somebody. And I thought he was asking my input about who I felt that was out there in the community to satisfy this role as assistant chief. And he said, I'm not calling that for that your advice. I want you. And I was at a point in my career where I thought that I was ready for that. I got to tell you, maybe a little bit of it was I'd been a chief of a smaller department, and now I'm being asked to be an operations chief of a large department, the third largest at the time. And so maybe there was a little, a test of the, do I have it? And so I signed a 2-year contract, and it was a fantastic 2 years. It was one of the most challenging, though, because I was brought in to not only help build the internal part of the department, but to continue building the relationships with the other departments in the community that we had mutual aid with. And I worked with some fantastic operations chiefs, people of my peers with Tucson Fire, Northwest Fire, and Golden Ranch Fire, and then expanding that out to the rural communities because we served unincorporated Pima County. So really, every one of our partners were our mutual aid department partners. And it was such a great 2 years, working with some fantastic men and women, my battalion chiefs, and being one of a few of the assistant chiefs. What a great learning experience. But I was getting to a point where I was going to get timed out in the military. And my choice to leave wasn't because of the job. It was because I wasn't ready to quit serving in the Air Force and the Air National Guard. And I was in an overgrade position, as you know, and then, you know, you get placed in an overgrade, you got 2 years to find another job or you're out. And I had to find another. So I came back to my job. The fire chief that replaced me retired, and the wing still wanted to hire this crazy guy. So I got hired back to be the fire chief again.
It is one of the challenges in the National Guard is there's certain rank structure. It works different than the Air Force. But I'd say in this case, for your career, it has been beneficial.
Absolutely.
Because you were able to stay in Arizona, where you were born, raised, loved, served. You accomplished amazing things, impacted more people's lives than I think I can even count.
Thank you.
And then you went into the civilian side of it, Chief. And again, you didn't want to stop serving. So you came back. And that's where I think you really fell into what, yes, you're one hell of a firefighter. That's what got you interested in service. But what I saw over the next several years was your ability to mentor, engage, and support airmen. So sometimes we think about this getting involved is all about what we're doing out in the public, but it's also about the organizations and it's about the people. So when you came back in 2008, it was only about a year till you were named the Wings Command Chief. Highest ranking, but there are several chief master sergeants as well, but you were really in charge and garnered with the care and feeding for the airmen. And I was blessed to shortly thereafter become the vice commander out of the wing. So I got to know you much better. I got to learn about the strengths and weaknesses of your basketball game. And we had more opportunities. But that was a different role for you because you weren't now just the firefighter. Yeah, you could go back and do that, but there's a new fire chief. What did you learn in that role? And what are the parts of it that you felt most proud of?
I wasn't planning on becoming the wing command chief. I had a number of current chief master sergeants that were in the wing at the time that had approached me, and I knew that I was being looked at by wing leadership on the officer side, but it was really my peers that had convinced me, the chief mentors of the world, and many others that convinced me to take the opportunity because they saw the leadership qualities in me. And this was from people that were my mentors, you know, and so the transition was actually, it was seamless to me. There was a shorter period of time. I was still the fire chief and the command chief, but the qualities, the leadership qualities that the wing commander felt that was the best fit for the wing commander at that time, it was seamless. So the same leadership qualities. Going back to it, doesn't matter the skill set, it's the qualities of leadership. The biggest difference was that when I walked into the wire every day, my firefighters were my top priority. I worked for my firefighters was my philosophy. They didn't work for me, I worked for them. Well, now I had to work my bosses. I had 1,700 enlisted that were my bosses every time I walked into the wire. And so my job was the readiness, not only civilian readiness, but the warfare readiness and then the health and morale of the force, and being able to report that back to the wing commander, vice commander, and the team. And had a lot of fun doing that. Met some fantastic airmen, of course, and then leading that when the adjutant general asked for me to become the first senior enlisted leader for the Arizona National Guard back in 2014.
And I want to come back to a take in there. We've only got about a minute and a half before the next break, but there was a lot of turmoil at the wing and locally. Can you talk about how the challenges that you faced with that, as we had significant leadership changes? We had Gabby Gifford shooting, which impacted the day of our new wing commander coming in. Talk about how you kind of worked through that with the airmen.
Yeah, so we probably hit the hardest time with things that were happening at the wing, not having to get into any detail, but it was a huge hit to the morale of the force. And we have to rely on our airmen being at peak performance to concentrate on their jobs, because many of them are fixing aircraft, or they are hanging bombs, or they are preparing our meals, or every one of our airmen are critical. And we ran through a lot of adversity. And we got through that. And I remember many conversations you and I having during that time of transition and as we were leading our airmen through that. And it's that adversity that I would learn later. It's the adversity that makes you better, not when things are running easy.
That's great advice. And we will talk about the rest of your military career when we get back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Good morning and welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. And Matt, you just hit my favorite Springsteen song. Took you a couple shows, but going in there, you finally found the one that I'd have to acknowledge that. So I'm with Chief Master Sergeant Shane Clark. He's also Mr. Shane Clark and works in the Department of Emergency Management inside of Pima County. And I told him at some point we'd probably become Shane, but I'm going to keep with the conversation with Chief in this week of celebrating the freedoms we have in this country and sharing service stories of some service that they provide others. And I hope you've been hearing in his voice the importance of the service of all of our airmen. It's incredibly critical. We left the other side of the break, Chief, talking about some of the turmoil at the wing. And there, we don't need to go into the details, but there was job changes, people. I personally thought my career was probably at an end. I actually started my civilian job, but had the opportunity because of Governor Brewer to serve as commander of the Arizona National Guard and seamlessly transition into my civilian future with Southern Arizona Leadership Council. You kind of face the same question. You were working for one wing commander. Things happened. You had another wing commander came in who I'd say because of who you are and your ability to lead, you bonded very well with any leaders you've worked for. But that put you in a position. You had one Air General Officer wanting you to come up and be the command chief, but you didn't want to move to Phoenix. And then you had another Air Officer that figured out a role for you, and you took that at the state. You alluded you became the senior enlisted advisor. Completely different role. You want to talk about what went in your decision on that process and why you took that challenge on?
It goes back to the person that asked, you know, and you touched on the job prior. It was at a time when I just could not break my family or break away from my family for one, and or my church at that time to move full time to Phoenix. But
yeah, I'm not resentful that you turned me down, but that's okay.
Yeah, but it was the general that asked. It was the general that was our wing commander, had become the adjutant general. There was a lot of turmoil going up at state at the time, as you well know.
Absolutely.
And a lot of it had to deal with some enlisted issues. And so when I had the opportunity to apply and walk through that process and be selected, I actually made a joke with the general at the time. I said, I think you need a command sergeant major to be the first senior enlisted leader of the Guard, because of the Arizona Guard, because you're the first blue Air Force adjutant general in 15 years, and you need that, have that strong enlisted leader to take your blue message and make it green Army.
And for those of you who don't speak Army, the command sergeant major is a senior ranking enlisted member in the Army.
That's correct.
So your advice was, don't pick me.
My advice was that due to the culture and everything that we're trying to change, I was fine in Tucson. And he disagreed with that. But that was when I had to go back to where the true essence of the National Guard is. And that is to be in a military position and then being in the civilian world. And so that afforded me the opportunity to get back into the civilian workforce again. I had been retired as a firefighter for a couple of years, but I was able to go to Pima Community College and run their Public Safety Institute. And then that led me, after I retired from the military, become the emergency manager. But my time as a senior enlisted leader, General McGuire at that time said, Chief, your leadership qualities are going to transcend, and your soldiers are going to quickly adapt to your leadership style, and they're going to benefit, and you as a leader are going to benefit from them. And he couldn't have been more absolutely true. It was the last 3 years in uniform, serving our Arizona National Guard soldiers and airmen were truly a dream come true for me.
Almost 9,000 strong?
Yeah, 8,500 between the Army Guard and the Air Guard, 5,500, and 80% are enlisted force. And I think that's the key, is that we need officer leadership. Don't get me wrong. It's how we move forward. But it's the 80% that make the mission run, right? So,
and what were some of the challenges and the experiences that you still hold close to you about serving in that role as the senior enlisted advisor for the entirety of the Arizona National Guard?
You know, I think that in all walks of life, we're going to face adversity, and we didn't have any more or less than any other organization. I think the key takeaway is that when you build strong leadership teams that are not focused on mission accomplishment or making sure that everything is right all the time, because it's not going to be, that's not life. It's how you deal with the adversity part. And we dealt with so many different levels of great things. We built fantastic teams, I believe. I think that our Arizona National Guard could go up against any National Guard, and even the active duty component. And it's proven by the awards that we have garnered over the time across the disciplines. Very well recognized, historically bound. But it's how we got through those times to get the force continuing to run down mission path when we were facing adversity and not having to worry about, you know, was there going to be some lateral collateral damage? No, we were going to get our airmen and soldiers through it. And we did. And that's the most thing that I can be, I think that's one of the things I can be the most proud of, is how we worked as a team, a leadership team with leadership qualities that we garnered the trust of our airmen and soldiers. They knew that we were going to be okay.
So facing adversity, you said, is the key to organizational success. And I think that's true about any organization. If you can't face adversity, you're not going to succeed. But it's a lot in who you are, your core values, and how you're grounded. Tombstone boy, grow it up, and you like to remind people of that all the time. But you've got an incredible family. You've got a wife who serves in the fire department. You've got two young daughters who are truly outstanding citizens already. How does somebody like Shane Clark do all that?
You raise a family by a village, and you have faith in God that you're walking down the right path. Faith to me is a relatively new concept. I did not grow up in the church. And my wife, when we started raising a family, dragged me in, biting and screaming, and off we went. And I can't think of anything more than this has all been for, you know, because of God. And so my faith is so strong now, and I know that he, even when I wasn't there, he was there and kept me down the path that I'm recognizing for what it is. Lori was a public servant for 20 years. We've been married for 23. And she is an inspiration to me. In her own public service, in her own passion of taking care of people, even today, as training younger skydivers to be great skydivers in a very risk-averse career field, she's an inspiration. And then thank you for acknowledging my daughters, because one is on the path of becoming an Air Force chaplain. She's going down the line of ministry, and the other is in the arts, and she might be a stage manager on Broadway one of these days, but she's incredible talent on the arts side.
And they obviously got all their athletic prowess from their mom.
That is not true, Ted. Not true.
Well, I tell you, Shane, I called you Shane there because I really appreciate you sharing your story with us. Your story in life has been about service. It's about leadership. For me personally, it's about mentorship from you as well as friendship. I've been very honored and blessed to serve with you. We'll bring you back on as Shane Clark sometime in the future to tell a little bit more about the emergency management side of Pima County. But you've been listening to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. Hope you tune in tomorrow as Jump in Tucson and Grant Krueger will be hosting. Celebrate and enjoy the freedoms of our country. But please remember, they require service. They require commitment and engagement. Give what you can. If it's being an informed voter, that's step one for you. But if you see opportunities through community service, through public service, or just helping out friends, families, and neighbors, please get engaged. We'll talk to you next week.